Chapter 5. Sabrina rushed through the door. There she found her sister bobbing up and down in a canal. She nearly fell into it herself, but Uncle Jake pulled her back just in time. Several men in white pants and shirts were standing in long, thin boats they maneuvered down the waterway using tall poles. One used his pole to nudge Daphne to the side of the canal, where Uncle Jake fished her out. When she was safely back on land, she reached into her pocket for her dictionary, but the book was waterlogged and ruined. Her face crinkled up in frustration, and she tossed it into a nearby trash can. "What does imprecise mean?" Daphne snapped. "It means not exact," Sabrina said. Daphne scowled. "You should have asked before," Sabrina said. Daphne scowled harder, then emptied the water from her shoes. "Welcome to Venice, girls," Uncle Jake said. Sabrina studied her surroundings. Scarecrow had been correct. There weren't streets in Venice, at least not in the part of the city where they were. Instead, the neighborhoods seemed to be connected by an elaborate canal system lined by narrow sidewalks. The elegant hotels, office buildings, and apartments on either side of the canals were built high so that doorways never touched the water. Boats of various shapes and sizes sailed by. Some were taxis, and others were for tourists to take on romantic rides through the majestic arches and bridges of Venice. As a native New Yorker, Sabrina was rarely impressed with anything outside of the Big Apple. After all, once a person had seen the Statue of Liberty, or had one of Nathan's hot dogs at Coney Island, there was little reason to see the rest of the world. But she had to admit, Venice was awe-inspiring. "So where's Goldilocks?" Sabrina said, pulling her attention away from the amazing scenery and back to the group. She noticed her uncle seemed to be hypnotized by something. He was looking up at the third floor of a hotel across the canal. "There," he said, pointing at a beautiful woman standing on the balcony. She had tight blonde curls, a sun-kissed tan, and a warm smile. She, too, was gazing out at the amazing city. Sabrina was overwhelmed, unsure of whether to laugh or cry. For months, she and Daphne had thought their parents abandoned them, only to find out they had been kidnapped. Rescuing them had provided little comfort, since they were both victims of a magical spell. Now that obstacle was almost hurdled, too. Hope, wonder, and joy were building in her heart, threatening to explode like a shaken bottle of soda pop. The feelings were mirrored in the faces of her family as well. Daphne, despite being soaked, was grinning ear to ear. Uncle Jake's fatigue seemed to melt away as he waved for the girls to follow him. They crossed a bridge to get to the hotel and rushed into the busy lobby. The Hotel Cipriani was even more impressive than the Scarecrow had led them to believe. The floors were made from priceless marble. Opulent arches framed the doors and beautiful sculptures decorated the lobby. The ceiling hung so high above them, Sabrina wondered if clouds ever drifted into the hotel. Dozens of bellhops rushed to and fro, carrying expensive luggage and helping guests to their rooms. Unfortunately, the group's arrival did not go unnoticed, and a chubby, gray-haired man in a black suit approached them. His face was full of disapproval. Sabrina realized how odd they looked for such an elegant place, her sister dripping wet, and her uncle in his wrinkled blue jeans and bizarre overcoat. "Posso aiutarvi?" he said. "I'm sorry, we don't speak Italian," Uncle Jake said. His comment caused the man's frown lines to deepen. "Americans," he huffed. "Are you lost?" "No, we're looking for a guest of the hotel," Uncle Jake said. "What is this guest's name?"
"Well, this is going to sound silly, but her name is Goldilocks," Sabrina said, bracing herself for a laugh.
However, the man didn't even blink.
"You are friends with Ms. Locks?" he said.
Uncle Jake nodded.
"Yes, we're very close."
The hotel manager seemed reluctant.
"Listen, pal," Uncle Jake said. "Are you going to help us find her, or should we just start knocking on doors?"
The man's eyes widened in horror. Take the elevators along the east wall. She's on the third floor. Suite 311.
Thank you, Daphne said.
The group took an elevator to the third floor and followed the hallways until they found the room.
This is it, Daphne said, taking Sabrina's hand. I can't wait to talk to Mom and Dad. They're going to be surprised by how much we've grown.
You want to do the honors? Uncle Jake asked her, gesturing to the door. Sabrina nodded. She took a deep breath and knocked on the door. It drifted open at her touch. The lock and door jamb were splintered and broken. The Grimms looked at one another, suspicious. Uncle Jake frowned, pulled a magic wand from his overcoat, and stepped through the doorway. Nothing else seemed to be disturbed in the front room, but there were doors leading to others. Hello? Jake called out. There was no answer, but a moment later Sabrina heard the sound of breaking glass. Uncle Jake held up his hand to motion for everyone to be quiet. They heard a door slam and followed the sound, walking through the beautiful suite filled with elegant furniture, paintings, and linens. When they got to a closed door, their uncle turned the doorknob and pushed the door open. Goldie, are you okay? Just then, a tall man in a black jacket and pants appeared from behind the door. He was wearing a black motorcycle helmet that disguised his identity. On his chest was a horrible mark, a handprint in red paint. The paint ran down in drips like blood. The girls had seen the mark many times, but never so far from home. It was the mark of the Scarlet Hand. The mysterious man punched Uncle Jake hard in the face and pushed past the girls and out of the room. As soon as he was gone, Sabrina and Daphne helped their uncle to his feet.
That wasn't very cool, her uncle complained as he rubbed his jaw.
Who was that? Sabrina asked.
Beats me, Uncle Jake said.
Where's Goldilocks?
They searched the other rooms, but there was no sign of the blonde beauty, or anyone else for that matter.
I think she left in a hurry, Uncle Jake said. Her clothes and suitcase are still in the closet.
Suddenly, Sabrina heard a loud engine start. Everyone rushed out to the balcony to find its source. The masked villain was on the narrow sidewalk below the hotel, sitting atop a black motorcycle. He revved his engine, sending a loud rumbling throughout the neighborhood, then sped along the edge of the canal. Sabrina wondered where he was racing, until she spotted Goldilocks drifting down the waterway in a gondola. The motorcyclist was following her.
She's in trouble, Daphne said.
Come on, Uncle Jake cried, and led the children out into the hall.
They bypassed the elevator for the faster stairs. They ran through the lobby, causing the manager to cross his arms with a harumph, and then they charged through the front doors out into the city. Outside, Sabrina spotted Goldilocks. She was surprised at the distance the boat had traveled in such a short time.
What now? She asked.
But Daphne had already sprung into action. She descended a flight of wooden steps and jumped into an empty gondola. A moment later, she had the barge pole and was pushing away from the dock, giving the rest of the group only seconds to climb aboard. Uncle Jake took the pole, and after a few awkward attempts, the group was floating down the canal in pursuit of the beautiful woman. Sabrina heard angry shouts from behind them and turned to see a red-faced gondolier race to the steps and shake his fist at the boat and its occupants. Daphne waved at the man apologetically.
Sorry, this is an emergency.
Uncle Jake pushed harder and harder with the pole, trying to catch up with Goldilocks. All the while, the man on the motorcycle puttered along like a mechanical tiger stalking its lunch. When he ran out of sidewalk, he simply steered onto one of the city's beautiful bridges and crossed to the other side of the street. His erratic behavior turned the heads of tourists and locals alike, as the sidewalks were built for pedestrians only. On more than one occasion, he forced an unlucky person to leap into the water to avoid being run over. The commotion was causing problems in the canal, too. Boats steered out of the way to avoid colliding with the unexpected swimmers. Other boats stopped abruptly, causing a traffic jam. In a matter of seconds, the family's chase had come to a complete halt.
"What do we do now?"
Sabrina said, watching Goldilocks's boat at the head of the line. She was still drifting along, undeterred. Uncle Jake set the pole in the boat. "We improvise," he said, stepping onto the boat next to theirs. Daphne was right behind him, followed by Sabrina. They moved from one boat to the next, careful not to capsize each new vessel. Soon they were making good progress and closing the gap between themselves and Goldilocks. Daphne called out to the woman when they were just three boats away. Goldilocks turned to them, but her attention was quickly distracted. The motorcyclist in black raced up a bridge directly over the canal and parked his bike. The bridge was under construction, and several large stones intended for the repairs were stacked nearby. The motorcyclist heaved one off the bridge and onto Goldilocks' boat. His aim was either incredible or incredibly lucky. The heavy stone blasted through the bottom of the boat, and water started pouring through the hole like a geyser. Startled, the gondolier leaped into the water, leaving Goldilocks to fend for herself. Goldilocks, however, stood up calmly, glanced around as if searching for someone, and then did something so odd that Sabrina wondered if the woman was insane. She began chirping and squawking at a pigeon resting on the bridge. The bird seemed just as surprised by the woman's noises as Sabrina, and it flew into the air.
"What was that all about?" Sabrina asked.
But before anyone could answer, a flock of pigeons returned, casting an enormous shadow over the canal. They dove down to Goldilocks's boat and dug their tiny talons into her clothes. Together, they lifted her out of the boat, their wings flapping furiously. Goldilocks sailed high above the canals and over the hotels and other buildings. Sabrina gaped as she watched the woman disappear into the horizon.
"Did you see that? It was like she was talking to those birds. They seemed to understand her," Sabrina said.
"Yeah, I forgot about that," Uncle Jake said. "Goldilocks can talk to animals." Sabrina scanned the bridge for the motorcyclist, but he was gone. All she heard was the sound of his engine fading in the distance.
"Who was that guy anyway?"
Daphne asked, as their boat bumped into the gondola of some Japanese honeymooners. "I don't know," Uncle Jake said. "But now I know why Goldie keeps moving around so much. He's chasing her. She's in danger." When the family returned home, there was no time to relax or even discuss what had just happened. Granny Relda and Barto, the miniature orc, were waiting. Judge Hatter had moved the trial up by 3 hours. If they didn't leave for the courthouse right away, they would miss the day's proceedings. Granny ushered them all downstairs and into the family car. Uncle Jake started the massive jalopy, and after a good 10 minutes of knocks and rattles and several loud backfires, the vehicle was on the road headed toward the courthouse. The courtroom was more packed than the day before, with many fresh faces in the crowd.
"Stay close, people,"
Barto insisted as he eyed the spectators suspiciously. Sabrina watched her sister roll her eyes at the little security guard, but said nothing. Her attention was focused on Snow White, whom she spotted near the door. Ms. White smiled when they entered, and Sabrina waved at her. Granny thanked her for coming, though their conversation was short and stiff. Even Briar Rose was there. She kissed Uncle Jake on the cheek, and he returned the gesture by kissing the palm of her hand. They all squeezed into seats. Robin and Little John had warned them that the trial would be more difficult the second day, and they weren't kidding. Bluebeard continued his prosecution of Mr. Canis by calling witnesses that had been victimized by the wolf hundreds of years before. There was a steady stream of talking lambs, pigs, and assorted forest creatures. Little Bo Peep, complete with staff and flock, complained that she hadn't actually lost her sheep, but that the wolf had eaten them. And just as he had done the previous day, Judge Hatter refused to allow Robin and Little John a chance to ask their own questions. Nottingham and Mayor Hart watched the proceedings with amused expressions, openly cackling whenever the family's lawyers were prevented from defending Mr. Caenis. The day dragged on, and by late afternoon, Sabrina wondered if there was a citizen left in Ferryport Landing whom the wolf had not tried to devour. She watched Caenis, waiting for an outburst from him. If he were to escape, there would be nothing Nottingham and the mayor's card soldiers could do to stop him.
"Does the prosecution have any more witnesses today?"
Judge Hatter asked. "We are finished for today, Your Honor," Bluebeard said. Robin leaped up.
"We have a few witnesses we'd like to question."
"Very well,"
Judge Hatter said as he got to his feet.
"Let's meet in the morning."
He strolled out of the courtroom, oblivious to Robin and Little John's angry shouts.
"This is outrageous,"
Little John bellowed, knocking over his chair and startling many of the onlookers. Nottingham, standing nearby, laughed heartily.
"Yes, it is, isn't it?"
the sheriff said cheerfully.
Little John looked like he might lunge at Nottingham, but Robin Hood held him back.
"He's not worth a headache, my large friend."
Nottingham laughed even harder as he joined Mayor Hart, and together they left the courtroom. The crowd of onlookers started to follow, and Bluebeard rushed forward, shoving people out of his way. He grabbed Snow White by the wrist before she could leave. Sabrina couldn't hear what he was saying to her, but Ms. White looked nervous and pale. Daphne noticed them talking, too, as clearly did the jury member in the black hooded cloak. Though Sabrina could still not make out his face, he hovered on the edges of the crowd, obviously trying to listen to the villain and the beautiful teacher.
"What should we do?" Daphne said.
"Don't worry," Bartow said.
He took out his walkie-talkie and barked a couple of orders into it. A moment later, a battalion of little green trolls raced into the room, surrounded Bluebeard and tackled him. Bluebeard fell to the ground and swatted at them viciously, but there were too many for him to overpower. Taking advantage of the distraction, Snow snuck out of the courtroom, but not before she turned to the family and mouthed the words, "Thank you." When she was safely gone, Sabrina turned to Bartow, whose chest was puffed up with pride.
"I owe you one," the girl exclaimed.
"Just doing my job," Bartow said. "Though, if you felt it appropriate to mention this to Puck, I'd be most grateful, I would."
Now that Snow was gone, the juror in the black cloak had vanished as well. Sabrina turned her attention back to her grandmother, who was busy trying to reassure Robin and Little John.
"You're doing your best."
"Our best is not going to keep your friend alive," Little John grunted.
"I agree," Robin said. "We're going to have to change our game plan."
"How so?"
Uncle Jake asked.
"If they won't let us question their witnesses in court, I think we should ask them questions outside of court," Robin said. "If only we knew who some of the eyewitnesses were."
"Eyewitnesses?" Sabrina asked. "It was 600 years ago."
Granny's face suddenly blanched.
"There's at least one eyewitness I know."
"Mom," Uncle Jake said, "you don't mean..."
"Aw, no," Daphne cried. "Not the nutcase."
Granny nodded.
"We need to go talk to Red Riding Hood."
After her pet, Jabberwocky, had attacked the town, Red Riding Hood had been hospitalized in the mental health wing of the Ferryport Landing Memorial Hospital. Even an irresponsible lunatic like the town's mayor, the Queen of Hearts, knew that Red Riding Hood was too dangerous to be allowed to roam free. Hart had consulted some witches who had put a magical barrier around Red's room. It allowed the girl to receive doctors, nurses, and any visitors brave enough to come near her, but it prevented Red from leaving. Sabrina didn't have a lot of faith in the spell. Red had managed to escape a similar one before with disastrous results. When the group arrived, Sabrina sensed the jittery hospital staff shared her nervousness. There were only a few people working in Red's wing, but they all looked tired, with dark circles under their eyes and unkempt hair. The slightest noise sent a few nurses into hysterics. It didn't help matters that besides Red, the hospital was completely empty. Since most of the humans from Ferryport Landing had been run out of town, there was no one who needed medical care. Everafters never got sick, and when they were injured, they healed very fast without the need for bandages and prescriptions. Red's insane screams echoing down the lonely halls made the hospital very creepy. A nurse met them at the door. She looked exhausted. Deep lines had formed in the corners of her chubby mouth, and her eyes were almost vacant, as if someone had turned the light off behind them. In addition, Sabrina had never seen a woman as fat as Nurse Spratt. She suspected the woman weighed upward of 800 pounds. She had also never seen a nurse eat a foot-long roast beef sandwich while she was on duty.
"The child is quite popular this week," Nurse Spratt said between bites. "You're her second group of visitors in the same amount of days."
"Bluebeard," Robin Hood said. Nurse Spratt nodded.
"Creepy guy. He and Red are like two peas in a pod. He was in her room for hours asking questions."
"Did you hear what any of them were?"
Little John asked.
"Nope. Truth is, I stay as far away from the patient as possible. She's what we in the medical profession call a loop-de-loop."
"We are aware of her troubles. What kind of treatment are you using on her? Drugs? Therapy? Counseling?" Robin asked.
"Treatment?" Nurse Spratt asked. "She's completely off her rocker. There's no treatment for a brain like hers. Poor thing, the things she's seen. I'd probably have a couple screws loose, too, if I saw my grandmother get eaten."
Nurse Spratt led them down a long, sterile hallway and stopped outside of a doorway that read, "Medical Personnel Only." The door had a dozen heavy-duty locks and a metal bar across it. Obviously, the staff had as little faith in the barrier spell as Sabrina did.
"She's right in there, folks,"
the nurse said, and she went about unlocking the door. When she was finished, she opened it and stepped aside.
"You're not going in with us?" Granny Relda asked.
"No way. She gives me the heebie-jeebies. But if I hear you screaming, I promise I'll come running."
"Thanks," Sabrina grumbled.
"By the way," Nurse Spratt said as she waddled back down the hall, "keep your fingers in your pockets. She's a biter."
"Perhaps I should guard the door," Barto said as he peered into Red's room.
Robin Hood led the group into a bright white room with prison bars on the windows. Crayons and colored pencils were scattered about, many smashed underfoot and smeared on the room's marble floor. Thousands of drawings were taped to the walls, all depicting the same scene. A small house in the woods, surrounded by a mother, father, grandmother, a dog, and a small girl in a red cloak. The mother was carrying a baby in her arms. Red Riding Hood sat at a tiny pink table, bolted to the floor. She was having a tea party with several stuffed dolls. All the dolls were mangled and beaten. Most were missing their eyes, others legs and arms.
"Party guests,"
Red Riding Hood cried, clapping her hands and laughing.
"Please do have a seat. There's plenty of tea."
"Relda, if you'd like to ask the questions, feel free," Little John said, eyeing the girl nervously.
"Of course," Granny said. "I've had some experience with Red."
"Yeah, like that time she tried to kidnap you and kill us," Sabrina said.
"Lieblings, stay close to me,"
Granny said to the children. The group approached the table tentatively, like they were sneaking up on a gorilla. Granny Relda was the first to take a seat, followed by Daphne, Robin Hood, and then Little John. Sabrina was happy to stand. She felt she could keep a better eye on the deranged ever after if she were on her feet.
"It's a lovely party," Granny Relda said.
"Thank you,"
Red Riding Hood said, as she gestured to an empty plate at the center of the table.
"Would you care for a cookie? My grandmother made them."
Thank you,
the old woman replied. She reached over and pretended to take one of the imaginary cookies. Robin and Little John did the same, while Red Riding Hood poured imaginary tea from a pot into everyone's cups.
Red, how are you feeling? Granny asked. They took my basket,
the little girl said.
I need my basket. I have to take it to my grandmother's house. She's very ill.
I'm sure they will give it back to you, Red. We were wondering if we could ask you some questions, Robin said, then pretended to take a sip of his tea.
I have questions, Red said. So many questions. The people in the white coats won't answer them, though. They say it's all my imagination. Well, how about if we play a little game? You can ask me a question, and I will try to answer it, and then I'll ask you a question, and you can do the same,
Granny Relda said.
Games! I love games! Red cried. Me first! Very well. What is your question?
Granny replied, as Robin Hood took a tape recorder from his briefcase and turned it on.
Where is my kitty?
Red asked. Granny looked at the girls for help. It was clear she didn't understand Red's question, but Sabrina knew all too well what Red wanted to know. She was referring to the Jabberwocky she had used to terrorize the town. It was a nearly unstoppable killing machine with 1,000 teeth, but to Red, it was a cuddly kitten. The family had used an enchanted sword known as the Vorpal Blade to kill it.
She's talking about the Jabberwocky,
Sabrina whispered. Granny's face flushed.
Red, your kitty is sleeping.
Sleeping?
Yes, he went to sleep and he didn't wake up,
Granny said.
Oh,
Red said, then grew quiet.
I love my kitty.
Perhaps you could get a new one, Robin Hood said.
A smaller one with less teeth,
Sabrina replied.
And one that doesn't breathe fire,
Daphne added.
Your turn,
Red said, rebounding from her sadness.
What can you tell us about the wolf?
Robin asked. Red Riding Hood peered at him for a long time. It was obvious that she was confused, but Sabrina remembered what Red had once called Mr. Canis.
He means the doggy, Sabrina said. You remember the doggy, right?
Oh, yes, the doggy, Red said. I loved the doggy, but he could be bad.
Bad?
Very bad. He bit Grandma, Red said.
We know,
Granny Relda said.
We were wondering what you remember about the night he bit your grandma.
The little girl sat quietly for a moment. Her eyes drifted off, as if she were struggling to remember something dancing on the edges of her mind.
Cages,
she said softly, then looked around at the room.
So many cages.
Uncle Jake turned to Granny Relda. What cages? Granny shook her head.
I've read nearly every version of the event, and I've never seen any mention of cages.
Red, can you tell us more about these cages?
Robin Hood asked.
No!
The child shrieked. There was so much anger and hate in her voice it startled even Little John. He nearly fell over his chair as he tried to back away.
It was my turn to ask a question!
Red cried.
You have to play the game right!
Of course, my friend,
Granny said in a calming voice.
We didn't mean to skip your turn. What is your next question?
Can I go home?
Sabrina shuddered. Her fear seemed to be shared. The rest of the group seemed just as unnerved by the suggestion. Ferryport Landing was on the verge of chaos already. The last thing it needed was Red walking around free. Eventually, Granny mustered the courage to answer.
You're very sick, and you need to get better. Once that happens, you can go home.
I don't feel sick. I don't have a runny nose.
That's because you are sick inside your mind. It's a different kind of illness.
You can't feel it at all.
Red frowned.
Okay. Can we ask a question now?
Granny asked. Red Riding Hood nodded. Tell us about these cages, Robin Hood said.
The doggy was in one, and then there was wind, and then he wasn't in the cage anymore. The doggy wasn't in the doggy anymore. He was in the man with the axe. He was an angry doggy. He made the other man scared. The other man cried. My turn! How is my baby brother?
Granny searched the faces of the group for an answer, but everyone was silent. She turned back to the child.
I didn't know you had a baby brother, Red.
Oh, yes, Red cooed. He's got bright red hair, pink skin, and big green eyes. I just love him so much. Is someone taking care of him?
Sabrina and Daphne looked at each other knowingly. They suspected that this baby brother of Red's wasn't really a relative, but a child she and the Jabberwocky had stolen. They had found a crib and baby toys in Red's hiding place once, but who the child was or where he might be now was still a mystery.
Yes, Granny lied. He's perfectly safe.
Good,
Red sighed.
Your turn.
You said that there was a man at your grandma's house, Robin Hood said. Who was he?
Which one?
Granny looked shocked.
I'm confused. Are you saying there were two men in your grandmother's house?
Red nodded.
One was the doggy. One was the man.
This is pointless, Sabrina whispered to her grandmother. Even if she does remember what happened, she is so confused. How can we trust anything she says? Granny nodded reluctantly.
I'm afraid I agree. Perhaps we should go.
Will you come and visit me again?
The little girl asked. Sabrina cringed at the idea of making another visit to the murderess ever after.
We'll try, Granny said. In the meantime, you work on feeling better.
Tell the doggy I said hello,
Red said. Once outside, Nurse Sprat set down her sandwich and went to work on the various locks and bolts that kept Red inside and safely away from others. Once Sabrina had calmed down, she noticed something in Robin and Little John's faces.
What?
She asked. Something isn't adding up here, Robin said. She spoke of cages. It might not mean anything, but I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't look into it. I think we need to go see our furry friend again. I'm guessing there's a secret locked inside the cage in his head, and we need to get it out. Uncle Jake dropped the lawyers, his mother, the girls, and Bartow off at the jailhouse, saying he needed to get back to the mirror and keep track of Goldilocks. Elvis also needed to be fed and let out of the house. Little John assured Jake he would keep the family safe. Bartow was offended by this and claimed he didn't need the big man's help.
Nottingham is never going to let us see Mr. Canis again, Daphne said.
Robin Hood smiled. I think that's something my strong friend can remedy. Little John grinned.
Finally, it's about time we started having some fun.
The big man walked over to a trash can, hefted it off the ground, and tossed it across the street and through the front window of a jewelry store. An alarm rang out that seemed to shake the air around Sabrina's ears. I suggest we hide, Robin said. The family and their lawyers hurried around the corner of the jailhouse and ducked down behind some bushes. Seconds later, they watched Sheriff Nottingham rush out of the building and across the street. He glared at the broken window and then dashed inside the store.
Let's go, Robin said.
The family raced inside the jailhouse and closed the door.
John, I believe we might need the princess, Robin said.
Little John nodded.
I believe you're right. I'll bring her back as soon as I can. But you know how she gets. If there's a hair out of place, she'll refuse to come.
I'm sure you can persuade her, Robin replied. The big man grinned.
My pleasure.
Moments later, he was gone. The group hurried back to the jail cells.
Canis was slumped in the corner of his, breathing hard and attending to wounds he had suffered at the hands of the card soldiers. He looked tired, though Sabrina kept her distance. A tired big bad wolf was still more dangerous than anything else known to man.
"Why have you come?" he said when he saw the family.
"We spoke to the child,"
Granny Relda said.
"You are wasting your time," Canis growled. "Can't you see your efforts are for nothing? Even if I wanted my freedom, Hart and Nottingham would never allow it."
"If we don't prove your innocence, they are going to put you to death," Robin said.
"So be it," Canis sniffed. "You cannot prove the innocence of a guilty man."
Everyone was quiet until Robin broke the silence. "Still, I believe we have a legitimate defense that needs to be explored. You and the wolf are two separate beings sharing the same body. If that's true, then we have to prove that you aren't in control when you are the wolf. To do that, we need to know exactly what happened that day." Canis shook his head.
"Come on, Mr. Canis," Daphne said. "You can at least answer some questions."
"Fine," Canis said. "What do you want to know?"
"What do you remember?" Robin asked. Canis sat quietly for a long time, then sighed.
"Nothing."
Granny Relda's face turned red, and she angrily waved her finger at the old man.
"Mr. Canis, you better start talking right now, or I swear Well, I don't know, but you won't like it."
"Relda, I have no recollection of that day or any before it," Canis said. "When I am the wolf, I only see tiny moments, like snapshots of events. I remember the blood, I hear someone screaming, but nothing is clear. When I am Canis, I only know that something terrible has occurred."
Red Riding Hood mentioned that she saw cages in her grandmother's house when she arrived that day. "She says you were in one of them," Robin said. Canis shook his head.
"The child has an imagination. I wouldn't take what she says too seriously. The things the wolf did that day, it was too much for a little girl to see. The damage I've done to that poor child's mind is inexcusable."
Just then, there was a terrific racket in the hallway. Sabrina gasped, fearing that Nottingham had returned. But when the door flew open, she saw Little John, who was carrying a woman in a blue dress over his shoulder. The woman was holding a miniature pug in her hands. The little dog barked and snapped frantically.
"Here she is, boss," Little John said.
"John, you put me down this minute," she cried. "I am royalty, you know. I have never been so offended in my life."
Robin approached the duo and looked up into the woman's face. "Hello, princess."
"Robin, so help me, if your lummox doesn't put me down this instant."
"Of course," Robin chuckled. "You can set her down, John." Little John eased the princess to her feet, and she complained bitterly about how he had wrinkled her expensive gown. When the woman was finished straightening her dress and looked up, Sabrina recognized her immediately. Her name was Beauty, though many people knew her because of her famous husband, the Beast. The duo were like night and day in appearance. She was a devastatingly attractive woman. He was a horrible nightmare with fur, yellow eyes, and tusks creeping out of his mouth. Sabrina had had a few run-ins with the couple already, and she knew the Beast was a member of the Scarlet Hand. Whether Beauty had joined as well, Sabrina didn't know.
"What are they doing here?"
Beauty asked, alarmed.
"These are my clients," Robin said, "and they are in need of some of your special talents."
The little pug sniffed the air and yipped. The poor creature was wearing a little black doggy tuxedo with a pocket square that matched his owner's dress and a tiny top hat.
"Hush, Mr. Wuggles," Beauty said.
Then turned her attention to the crowd.
"Mr. Wuggles is not happy."
She proceeded to kiss the dog and speak to him in baby talk for several minutes.
"Boss, I don't think we've got a lot of time,"
Little John said. "Nottingham will be back when he gets bored."
Good point, Robin said, and turned to Beauty. Princess, we need you to hypnotize someone so we can ask some questions. Beauty craned her neck to see into the cell. Her eyes grew wide and she shook her head. Robin Hood, you've lost your mind if you think... You're the only hope we have, Robin said.
But that's the...
We know, but your husband was just as wild as the wolf when you met him. You know the kind of effect you have on savages. If I thought we could get the information any other way, I would. Beauty stepped up to the cell and looked inside. Mr. Wuggles did the same and whined. Oh, boy, the princess sighed.
What's she going to do? Sabrina asked.
Beauty turned to her.
I calm down animals, even put them into hypnotic states. I guess you could say I'm the monster whisperer.
Beauty turned back to the cage. Okay, pal, I'm going to come in there, but you have to promise not to eat me. Canis nodded. Little John raced to the cell door with a set of keys.
Nottingham ran out of here without them.
The cell door swung open. Beauty shoved her dog into Sabrina's arms and stepped inside. Close the door, she said.
And lock it, Canis added.
Little John did as he was told. Beauty sat down on a crude chair next to Canis.
Well, are you ready to get started?
Canis looked to Granny Relda with an expression of doubt.
For me, old friend,
Granny said. Canis nodded. Beauty rested her hand on Canis's muscular arm. All at once, the tension in the old man seemed to dissolve. His body relaxed, and the wild animal scent that filled the room disappeared. The anger and hate in Canis's eyes were replaced with a calm, almost sleepy expression.
Feel better? The princess asked.
Canis nodded.
What do you want to know?
Beauty asked the lawyers.
Ask him to describe what happened the night Red Riding Hood's grandmother died,
Robin replied.
Oh, that's going to be so gross,
Beauty complained. She pointed at Sabrina.
You, cover Mr. Wuggles' ears. He's very sensitive. I don't want him hearing this.
Sabrina did her best, though the dog refused to cooperate. Instead, he squirmed in Sabrina's arms until he was facing her, then proceeded to lick every inch of her face.
Okay, big guy, Beauty said to Canis. I want you to hear my voice only. You will see only what I ask you to see, and though what you might see will be shocking, it won't bother you at all. In fact, it will be like you are watching a movie.
Okay, Canis said, and he closed his eyes.
Let's go back in time. I want you to go back to one night in particular. It was the night you met Little Red Riding Hood. Are you there?
Yes.
Good. Tell me what you see and hear.
Canis shook his head.
It's fuzzy. I can't make out anything.
Concentrate, Beauty said. Try to bring it into focus. Canis's body went into convulsions. His head swung back and forth violently.
He's fighting me, Beauty told the crowd.
Keep trying,
Little John replied as he nervously watched the door for Nottingham's return.
It doesn't work like that, Beauty snapped. It's not a matter of trying harder. His brain opens up or it doesn't. There's something he doesn't want to tell me.
Suddenly, Canis relaxed.
I'm running.
Where to?
Beauty asked.
There's a tiny house in the woods.
Do you see anything else?
Beauty asked.
Light is blinding me and the trees are leaning over, he said.
He's talking crazy like Red, Sabrina whispered to her grandmother.
Why are the trees leaning over? Beauty asked, ignoring Sabrina's comment. Canis shook his head.
The wind is incredible. I'm pounding on the door. I want him to follow me, but he's afraid.
Who is afraid?
Beauty repeated. Canis was silent.
I can't see him anymore. I'm inside the house. The old woman is there. The child is crying.
Are you talking about Red Riding Hood?
Beauty asked. Canis nodded.
Then there is wind.
So much wind.
Beauty turned to the lawyers. Is any of this making sense to you? Robin shrugged.
Ask him if he sees any cages.
Beauty repeated the question, and for a long moment the old man was silent. Then he nodded.
Yes, cages, he said. Something is in one of them, but the wind is so strong I can't see it. It's some kind of animal. It's out. It's coming at me.
Canis let out a horrible scream that startled everyone. Then his eyes flickered open and he looked at Beauty.
Who's that playing around in my head? He growled.
The princess fell backward and ran toward the cage door. Luckily, the chains that bound the wolf's arms and legs held him back. He laughed at her fear and promised he would kill her someday. Then he looked over at the grim family and smiled.
Your day is coming too.
Once Little John helped Beauty out of the cell, Canis seemed to regain control of himself. He apologized and slumped back into his corner while the big lawyer locked the cell door tight.
I've lost the connection, Beauty said as she caught her breath. Not even my soon-to-be ex-husband was this difficult.
You and Beast are splitting up, Robin said with a sly grin.
Does your wife Marion know what kind of a flirt you are?
Beauty said with a little laugh. Sabrina's heart sank.
Robin was married. Beauty, the two of you have been together for centuries, Granny said. He's in the Scarlet Hand. I can't convince him to give it up, and I just can't reach him anymore. He's not the man I married.
So you haven't joined? Daphne asked.
No, I'm no revolutionary, Beauty said. I remember the last time this nonsense came up. That's how we all got stuck in this town. Beast says Everafters should be in charge. He says the master is going to rule the world and we'll enslave the human race, blah, blah, blah. I'll have none of it. All I want from this world is a new pair of shoes every day for the rest of my life.
She reached over to Sabrina and took her dog. And, of course, a diamond-studded collar for Mr. Wuggles. She cooed to the dog. She showered the slobbery little mutt with kisses, and he licked her face happily.
The only thing you're going to get is the edge of my blade, you traitorous idiot!
A voice bellowed from the doorway. The group spun around to see Nottingham step into the room, his curved dagger clenched firmly in his hand.